Kildare Focus with Ciara Plunkett.
You're welcome on in to Tuesday's edition of Kildare Focus. In just a moment, I'll be speaking to Newbridge GP Dr. Brendan O'Shea about research by the Society of Actuaries in Ireland revealing the risk of death because of COVID-19 is higher among men than women. We'll be checking in with Pat Costello. He is in North Kildare this afternoon. We think he's going to be in Leixlip when next we hear from him. It's World Oceans Day and we'll be marking that with Pádraig Fogarty, Campaign Officer at the Irish Wildlife Trust. Owen Beatty will join me in studio. We will be talking about the return of spectators to some forms of matches and stadia in the coming days, and we'll be talking about requirements for fans. Now, FORSA has long been campaigning for the introduction of a four-day work week, and to advance that, it is beginning a new project to assess the financial impact of a four-day working week on businesses. As always, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with your comments, your requests, your dedications by text or WhatsApp to 0833 97 97 97. You can drop us an email if you wish, studio at kfmradio.com, and you can tweet us at KFM Radio. New research conducted by the Society of Actuaries in Ireland has shown that COVID-19 affects men in this country more severely than women, with a significantly higher risk of death. I'm joined on the line to discuss this now by Brendan O'Shea. He is, of course, a GP in Newbridge. Brendan, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon.
I would imagine if you were reading this without any of the context that may surround this study, and you happened to be a man, you might be a little alarmed.
Men are terrible for not being alarmed. That might be the root of this problem. The classic masculine mindset, we're supposed to hang tough, be strong and silent. And we've speculated as to why COVID is more likely to be fatal in a man than a woman. This may be part of the reasoning. We know in practice that men tend to delay coming to see a doctor.
Yeah.
And men are also more likely to minimise their symptoms, that if they have some shortness of breath or some chest pain, they'll stick it out a bit longer. Women, on the other hand, are essentially more intelligent in the way that they use healthcare services. They attend earlier and they respond more appropriately. And in something where acute rapid progression is a feature of severe end spectrum COVID, that might be at the heart of this, but I'm speculating, I have to say. I'm at a loss to really explain it, but it's a really fascinating finding.
It certainly is, and the research adds that once a person is tested positive for the virus, they're at least 25% more likely to die if they are male. In some age groups, men could be up to 50% more likely to die from the disease, and the disparity in the death rate between men and women was most marked in the third phase of the pandemic. I have to say, Brendan, you are speculating and you've acknowledged that, but it does seem that delay in accessing health services would certainly play a contributory role, perhaps, in the increase in death by COVID experienced among men, because, as you say, time is of the essence, and women tend to access healthcare much earlier.
Is one thing, and I suppose another thing, before we plunge back into the COVID space, we also need to understand that the men in Kildare are far more likely to die from smoking-related illness, excessive use of alcohol, and trauma and suicide. Than they are likely to die of COVID. Which men are we talking about now? Now we're especially talking about men under 40, because most men over 40 have been immunised, and we clearly understand the data the actuaries are referring to relates to a pre-immunised population, deaths in a pre-immunised population. We know that in the immunised population, and the people have been fantastic in Kildare for coming forward and getting their immunisations. So now we're talking about a very small number of deaths in the under 40-year-olds. I think it's really important to keep perspective on it.
And to put that context on it, because if you, as I kind of alluded to at the start, if you listen to the headline figure, it sounds terrifying, and absolutely it's a tragedy for anyone who's experienced a loss because of or pertaining to COVID. But I suppose what's important here is to get the aligned message out that whatever your gender, that if you're experiencing a health difficulty of any kind, go immediately to your doctor and don't delay.
Well, in the absence of absolute certainty around the significance of the findings, common sense is a good way to go, and particularly anybody who's got a COVID. Now, in practice, every day in Kildare, we GPs are having conversations with people along the lines of, yes, I have a sore throat, and I've had a runny nose, and I've had a bit of, oh, no, it couldn't be COVID. I've got my sense of taste. I know it couldn't be COVID. So common sense is the way forward. Have a conversation with the practice nurse is a brilliant source of advice. If it's at the weekend with KDOC or in the out-of-hours setting with KDOC, have a conversation. Get tested early. And again, in terms of an accelerating serious COVID-like illness, what we're looking at is progressive shortness of breath and minimal exertion, typically after day 5 to day 10 of onset of illness. That's the classic bad COVID story. But Kildare men are at much greater risk from smoking, from trauma, from suicide, from depression, than they are from COVID, particularly, this is in the context of people who are under 40 and who haven't been immunised.
One of the interesting things from the study, and again, you have emphasised it, I will do so, this study took place before the vaccination programme began in Ireland. So one would imagine at the latter end of 2020 when the landscape was somewhat different. The findings, though, are consistent with the experience in most other countries where the data is available. Across 95 countries, a male-female ratio of death of 1.35 to 1 or 1.35 male deaths for every female death has been reported. That's certainly worthy of further investigation.
Well, it's absolutely fascinating. It's really important. And again, the jury is out as to whether there's a hard biological reason that can be identified at the molecular level or at the genetic level, or whether more has to do with the psychology of illness and how we engage with illness episodes when we experience them. And there's huge variety. We love, and particularly when we're dealing in a soundbite environment, we like to be able to nail it with a sentence. But the biology and pathology and the illness in the human population it's very hard to actually nail it down like that. There's a bit more to go with this one.
Well, Brendan O'Shea, of course, a GP based in Newbridge and a keynote member of the Irish College of General Practitioners, thank you indeed for joining us there. I want to bring you a little more information on a story that is breaking and that we noted in our 2 o'clock headlines, and it is that a man has been seriously injured in an overnight incident in Kyledoon. Gardaí say it appears the man in his late 20s may have been knocked down, and they're investigating whether he may have been run over. He's being treated in hospital for what are described as serious injuries. A forensic examination of the scene has already taken place and Gardaí are following a line of inquiry. Today is World Oceans Day and our oceans are in enormous trouble. To discuss this, I'm joined on the line by a very patient Pádraig Fogarty, campaign officer with Irish Wildlife Trust, who has been hanging on the line. Pádraig, you're very welcome to the programme.
Hi there, thank you.
Now, World Oceans Day, I would imagine, is as much to bring attention to their state of health as to celebrate them.
Yeah, well, I suppose both, but it does give us an opportunity to reflect for a minute on the ocean, and we are an island nation. Even if you live in the inland bits of Ireland, you're not too far from the ocean. And of course, we depend on the ocean more than we realise. We get half of our oxygen from the ocean. The ocean has stabilised our climate for millions of years. It's without the ocean, in fact, climate change will be much, much worse than it has been. The ocean has absorbed an awful lot of the carbon dioxide that has been produced by fossil fuel burning. And, of course, for thousands of years it has fed us. But the ocean is in dire trouble at the moment. We really have abused us to the point where ocean ecosystems are in collapse. We have been overfishing for decades, and you know, even though we've said we'd stop doing it, we haven't stopped doing it. We said we'd create marine protected areas, and we haven't done that either. And an awful lot of the species now, unfortunately, in our oceans are threatened with extinction. So it does give us an opportunity to celebrate the ocean and our links with it, but we have to recognise that it's in dire trouble, and we really need to do something about it.
And that something, or that collection of things, Pádraig, needs to be quite drastic at this stage, because campaigners and groups such as the UN and others have been calling for many, many years for many of those actions that you've just touched on.
It does, yes. I agree. We do need to be drastic about it. The fishing industry itself in Ireland is in crisis, and fishing is the biggest negative impact on the ocean. We have allowed damaging fishing practices, unregulated fishing, unsupervised, illegal fishing to go on in our waters for too long. And that has to come to an end. So we have to radically reimagine our relationship with the sea. We have to invest in it. I mean, the government has not invested in any kind of ocean protection measures. But we do find that when that does happen, when we do protect the ocean and stop overfishing, that sea life does rebound. And of course, that has many benefits for people. So really, the time for talking has passed. We really have to get on and take action on this.
Well, Padraig Fogarty, Campaign Officer at the Irish Wildlife Trust, thank you indeed for joining us. Coming up after the break, we'll be talking about the return of spectators and a four-day working week. Now, spectators are about to begin their slow, measured return to sporting events. And to talk us through what the plan is, because those plans will be put in motion in the coming days, I'm joined now by KFM's own Owen Beattie. Owen, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Ciara. Good afternoon.
Are you looking forward to getting back into a stadium near you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this kind of marks the semblance of some sort of normality, you know, because I think when the first lockdown was lifted, we were all watching sport on television and we saw that stadiums were empty and there was no spectators whatsoever, and it felt a bit strange. And then that became the normal, looking at the empty crowds or the lack of crowds. But yeah, definitely, I think the fact that even Kildare are back playing now in the league campaign, the Champions League was played in front of spectators, it definitely makes a difference, and it's slowly getting back to some sort to normality, which is good.
It's fantastic, and as you say, a dose of normality. On a purely personal basis, I could not get used to that canned crowd noise at a lot of the matches that were not really broadcast from Ireland but from elsewhere. It just sounded so artificial.
Yeah, and like, I mean, there's nothing can replicate the sound of a live crowd. And it's the same with concerts. Like, it's anything that really involves a crowd, because it's so unique, whether it's a sporting event, a concert or anything else. So yeah, definitely, I think a lot of people will be welcoming this news. I think it broke last week eventually when the plan was announced of the reopening of the country, that this is when spectators will be allowed to come back into it. There's kind of two aspects of it. Contact tracing through ticket details will form a major part of it. So if you buy a ticket for an event, I think you can be traced for up to 28 days. Jack Chambers, of course, the Minister with responsibility for sport, said that the contact tracing element of the return of large-scale sport meetings will enable health authorities to track a ticket holder for almost a month, so 28 days. The other aspect of it as well then is what's called the code of conduct, which will include mask wearing and social distancing and will have to be followed by event organisers and spectators. So
that will apply even though the vast majority of the stadia and locations at which sporting events with spectators are being trialled are outdoors. The authorities here are being very cautious, and perhaps rightfully so.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen it in the UK, you know, the likes of Anfield, which would host maybe 46,000 people, has a crowd of 2,000. So we're bringing back in spectators to sporting events very, very slowly. I mean, here I think we can have 100 at club games, and then it'll be 200 at larger grounds. So the likes of St Connolly's Park, Kildare are playing Meath this weekend. St Connolly's Park, I think, has a capacity of about 8,000 or 9,000. That obviously qualifies then for the 200 rule. So we'll see 200 people in.
If you were among those 200, you'd feel like you were rattling around with all the space in the world. But I suppose you and those spectators are helping in a small way to ensure that in the coming months more spectators, more fans can go to Kildare games.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's essentially like a trial basis, but it's done so in a very, very measured way. So just to run through the guidelines then, under the new guidelines, like I said, 100 spectators attend a local game. So that will be your club match, which gets back underway this weekend as well, by the way. Moving to 200 in July. For stadiums over 5,000 capacity, which will be St Connolly's Park, 200 people can attend from now, and 500 in July. And there's also 16 test events taking place as well, between 5 and 10% capacity. Again, there's a local aspect there that the Curragh will have some will have a test event, so we'll see how that goes. Other games that will be trialled is the Camogie Championship. There's also a couple of League of Ireland games involving the likes of Shamrock Rovers just up the road in Talla. Also Finn Harps as well will be playing. So like I said, it will definitely you know, be welcome news. It'll bring back that semblance of normality. But the main thing is public health and safety. And, you know, people who are visiting these games will have to abide by those rules. Wear the mask, socially distance from other people who are attending the games, and then the contact tracing as well is a big part of it.
Huge. And it looks here from the face of it like the authorities are following the same model that was in being at indoor dining before Christmas. So if six people book a table, they just need the name and contact details of one person for contact tracing, not the entire group that has booked or paid for a ticket. So if you, I and Kira, let's say for example, were taking ourselves off to Connaught's Park this weekend and you paid for the tickets, thanks very much. It's your name that Kildare GAA will retain, and you with whom they will get in contact if there is an issue, and we're absolutely certain that there wouldn't be, and then you will contact us or share our details with the HSE.
Exactly. And you also touched on a point as well from the outset, is that all of these events are going to be outdoors, so we're not going to, the likes of tennis indoors or basketball or anything like that won't have crowds yet. So it's done so in a very measured and safe manner. The likes of Gaelic games, soccer, horse racing, rugby, all these events are taking place outdoor to see how it works. And then eventually, hopefully, fingers crossed down the line, we can move indoor and get back to full crowds coming back into the gates.
And we'd all be delighted at that point.
Absolutely.
To be stuck cheek by jowl in a stadium watching our team win. That's our own Owen Beattie. Thanks for joining us. Now, Forsa has, for the last little while, been running a campaign to try to secure a 4-day working week for those for whom it would be appropriate right throughout the economy, and kind of to underpin that campaign, a very significant study on the impact of such a change to the working schedule is being undertaken. Joe O'Connor is a Forsa campaign director and chair of 4-Day Week Ireland. Joe, you're very welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, Ciara.
Tell us about this project. It's being undertaken by yourselves in the 4-Day Week Ireland campaign in conjunction with UCD and Boston College. It's a fairly weighty project.
That's right, Ciara. So I suppose this is something that we've developed in light of the fact that since around 2018, we've seen the idea of the 4-day working week growing in interest and momentum internationally. We've seen more and more companies introduce this either on a full-time basis or on a trial basis and report very, very positive outcomes in terms of their productivity levels, in terms of their employees' well-being, and a whole range of other factors. And really what this partnership sets out to do is to see if those results can be replicated at scale in terms of companies of different sizes, in different sectors, and even in different countries. So this partnership with UCD and Professor Juliet Shore, who's an expert in working time reduction from Boston College, will really set out to look beyond just the company level research that we've seen over the last number of years, and to see if, you know, what will the economic, social and ecological impacts of the 4-day working week be if trialled in a coordinated way by a larger number of companies.
Because on a micro level, each individual company will be concerned about the effects on it in terms of practicality. It may work for the products or services that that company provides, or it may not categorically. And then I would imagine that most employers are concerned about productivity, with the assumption that there's 20% less working time available, therefore you're going to do 20% less work but expect 100% of pay.
Yeah, and obviously the 4-day week examples and the evidence that we've seen up to now would really challenge that assertion that if you move towards 80% of working time that you would automatically see 80% productivity. That hasn't been the case in the majority of companies who have done this. Perpetual Guardian in New Zealand reported a 25% increase in productivity. The ICE Group in Galway here in Ireland reported a 27% increase. And this was really achieved based on the fact that their employees were more motivated, they were happier, they were more focused. And obviously there was changes made to their business practices that in return for the extra day off, in return for the 4-day week, that lower value activities such as maybe too many meetings, removing or reducing other activities over the working day that didn't contribute to the same degree as to productivity, has allowed these companies not just to maintain their productivity levels but actually to increase them in many cases. So again, we're hoping that this trial and this research will allow us to see is that the case on a larger scale? Mm. Are the results that we've seen in terms of, you know, reduced absenteeism, reduced sick leave, a lot of companies saying that their ability to retain and to attract staff has been greatly enhanced since they moved to a four-day working week. I mean, that's all incredibly, incredibly encouraging research that we've seen in recent years. But as far as I'm aware, this is the only and the first international study to try and do that on a much larger scale, in a much more coordinated way across different companies. And indeed, the intention behind this research is that it will look at you know, the methodology that we're using in Ireland will also be applied to other pilot projects that are going to be carried out in the US and New Zealand and the UK, which hopefully should allow us to compare and contrast across political jurisdictions as well.
When, Joe, do you expect to have findings to present?
So at the moment, the timeline we're working to, and I'd be certainly happy to come back and have a chat with you at the various you know, stages of the project, but we're planning to launch the pilot program in the coming weeks. We're going to be open for business in terms of trying to recruit participant companies and employers to take part in this trial. We're going to be announcing a range of business supports and training and guidance that can be provided to those companies and employers that sign up to take part. We're also in discussions with government about how they might be in a position to support this pilot project in Ireland. And then over the course of the next 6 months, we're going to be trying to get as many companies on board with a view to rolling out the six-month trial early next year, so kicking off in January of 2022. And obviously then we'd be hopeful that by late summer next year we'll be in a position to produce the findings in terms of what was the impact on productivity, what was the impact on employee well-being, what was the impact on carbon emissions, what was the impact on gender equality, and all these other areas that we're really interested to find out the effects.
Well, Joe O'Connor, Forsa Campaign Director and Chair of the 4-Day Week Ireland Campaign, thank you indeed for joining us. And I think the results of that particular study will be very, very interesting to behold.